T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. It's Wednesday, and I know that for a fact because I looked at the calendar. God, I'm proud of myself when I get the day of the week right. Triple and double claps to that one. Yeah, how do I get through the day? How do I get myself to work, you might be wondering. But it happens. It happens. We got a great show planned for you. We have Nick Mora, Loveline's pop culture guru, with us. She's going to be with us in studio for 2 segments. Happy to have her in town. And then later in the show, Jared Hill from Drop the Subject is going to be joining me for a little bit of a, is it Wednesday or is it the wine? We're going to be just digging into some personal stuff. It's all about getting vulnerable, keeping it real. And of course, question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. Today's question is, what's more important to you when dating, chemistry or compatibility? Would you try to make it work if you had one and not the other? Me and Jared Hill will be talking about that. But right now, let's get into some news. Fascinating study, not shocking, but fascinating. So Uber and Lyft drivers routinely cancel Black LGBTQ riders, a new study confirms. The data is actually really hard to hear. It was really powerful when I read through it. So a new study, they looked at thousands of riders, and it basically confirmed that, yes, there is an inherent bias among the drivers of these ride shares. So the researchers created passenger profiles, and they used pictures of people of color and names that were usually perceived as being of color. And they also created profiles that included rainbow flags that would show that the rider was LGBTQ or maybe just an ally. And they compared it to the other requests. And they basically learned that the Black riders were canceled about 3 times as much as white riders. And the LGBTQ customers or allies were canceled twice as much as those without the rainbow symbols. That's startling numbers. 3 times as much and twice as much? That's real. Basically, though, they tried to land it and said, look, the best way we can try to combat that is by penalizing drivers who exhibit this bias in the cancellations, because you can look at all the cancellations and you can start to see, they're all people of color that are getting canceled or people that are LGBTQIA flaggable, and basically incentivizing drivers who exhibit low cancellation rates. Yeah, battling homophobia and racism. It's still real, y'all. I mean, a lot of times people think that we've successfully ended that battle. Oh, no, no, no. Also, sticking with the theme of LGBTQIA, new study confirms what I've been telling y'all all along, and other studies have confirmed, that there is no difference in terms of mental health of children that are raised by same-sex parents as opposed to opposite-sex parents. Children raised by same-sex parents fared as well as children raised by parents of 2 different sexes, a study in the Journal of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics shows, but we knew this already. Basically, the study, I'll just get to the punchline, that stability is what matters, not sexual orientation. Just that it's a stable family unit. Doesn't matter if it's gay parents, straight parents, 1 parent, 2 parents, 10 parents, as long as stability is there. And that's what the research I have looked at has shown, as well as my clinical practice, that children need primary caregivers that love them. It doesn't matter their gender. It doesn't matter their race. It doesn't matter sexual orientation. They just need love and care. Bam. It's that basic. And I love hearing that. And in fact, again, I've said this before, but let me repeat it. The studies actually show that children of same-sex parents fare better in a lot of mental health indicators, including compassion, care, acceptance around diversity and difference, and have better communication skills. Bam. Okay. Another study. Love this one. Love this one. Headline is, women who hold anti-feminist attitudes tend to fake orgasms more so. Not shocking, though, because basically we know that, you know, a woman who has an anti-feminist attitude, fake orgasms, but the women who are feminists and have that perspective, they're not going to do it because they believe that they have a right to pleasure and they're more comfortable talking about sexuality openly and they're going to ask for what they want, demand what they want, seek what they want. So not shocking.
Yeah, queen.
Yeah, that's right. So feminism saves your sex life. It'll lead to the sexual pleasure you want. And let's land with poor Aaron Carter. This guy's had a rough one. He's really had a rough one. And right now it's in news because he just got his face tattooed and essentially was seeking to get his entire face tattooed. But the tattoo artist showed up and said, look, when I'm about to tattoo someone, I'm ethical. And so I take into consideration what I think their mental state is. And he basically talked Aaron out of getting his entire face done. So it's important to look at. Wanting to get tattoos in obvious places like your neck or your face does not indicate a mental health issue at all. In fact, it could be quite the opposite, where someone has enough confidence and whatnot where they're willing to, you know, authentically go after what they want in terms of body modification. But if we do track Aaron Carter's history, it does look as though he was struggling with a lot of mental health issues and some drug and alcohol stuff. And so I'm thankful that people in the body modification field, like this tattoo artist, had enough ethics to really weigh in on what is the mental state of this person, and did talk to him about the ramifications, and they landed on just part of his face, not his entire face. But National Coming Out Day and the 1 year anniversary of Channel Q, we're having a contest. Go on wearechannelq.com to enter. This is a good one. We are going to fly you and a friend to LA. We are going to put you up in a banging hotel. We are going to take you out to the iconic Abbey for drinks and two tickets to the biggest event of the year, the Weekend Survive concert at the Hollywood Bowl with Lizzo, Taylor Swift, Jonas Brothers, more and more and more. Come on, y'all. You can't beat that. You got 3 days, 3 days, 3 days. We are channelq.com. Get on it. I'm going to come out and meet y'all at the Abbey for a drink. I kid you not. I don't turn that down. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And tonight we're sitting down for an extended celebrity rehab with our pop culture guru, Nick Moore. What's up?
What's up? It's so cool to actually be like here for an extended amount of time.
That's right. And a lot of our listeners don't know that usually we do it remote, that you're not in the studio.
I know. I call in from all over the world, boo.
You are very busy, but we appreciate you always taking time.
And busy.
That's right. To give us the celebrity dirt.
Yes.
So before we get into any of that, I just wanted to kind of sit with you a little bit and find out more about the work you do. Not everyone's familiar with the whole world of pop culture and blogging and all that. So what made you want to get into the world of celebrityism?
Okay, so celebrityism has always kind of like been my thing without me even knowing that it was my thing. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I always loved the world of celebrity, and I thought, I grew up with so many like children of celebrities. I'm LA born and bred.
Which is so rare. So rare.
It's the rarest thing. And so I've always had the inside scoop and kind of always been an insider, but also an outsider at the same time. And I always thought celebrities were so fascinating because how did you get from like rags to riches? You know, it's very rare that you see a rich celebrity who grew up rich, even though it's like way easier to be that way. Unless you've had people in the industry and you're a daughter of somebody, a lot of people, it's like a game of luck. You come here, live in your car for like years until you finally make it. And I was just so fascinated. I think like the peak of it was with Paris and Nicole when they had the reality show.
I will never forget that. That's, I think, what was my entry point into celebrities' lives as well, because they kind of put the whole reality behind the scenes piece on the map.
Right. And I feel like you would watch them and you were just so intrigued by their life, and you finally are starting to break a wall between celebrity and everyday folks. And then the Kardashians came about and it was finally like someone looked like me on TV. Mm. You know, as a Middle Eastern girl, you never saw anybody with curves. You never saw anybody with a butt besides J-Lo when she was Selena. So as time went on and reality TV kind of grew, that's when I was a little bit more fascinated by the depth of the celebrity story.
Okay, so that's interesting. So not only were you pulled in by their world and their work, you personally like to see yourself represented. Because one of the things I look at all the time, psychologically speaking, is how there was a time before all of that and technology and social media where your family and school was like the number one socializers, but now it's celebrities, the amount of power that they have on culture.
Yeah, I mean, celebrities really are tastemakers, a lot of them. I don't like to use the word influence, sir, because I don't think anyone's really influencing anybody. I don't think I'm influencing you in your life. I think I might be helping you and maybe relating with you and connecting with you. But I think that celebrities are the real tastemakers. They're the trendsetters. We're following their every move. We're following what they're doing. We're following what they're saying. Paris Hilton had to trademark "That's hot." Damn. That was the first time a phrase like that from a celebrity caught on because we were all exposed to it. And as the world of the internet rose and social media, it's like we now have constant access and we're never satisfied.
It's overwhelming because I can't imagine having to constantly produce content to keep yourself relevant.
Yeah, I mean, I have to produce content all the time and I just don't want to because it's about me and my life and like what I'm doing, unless I'm producing content to help you, which is what I try to do on my blog, Give Me Mora. But I mean, other than that, it's like, do you really care that I'm going and having a coffee?
Yes. Yes. That's the thing people do.
Like, I think
that's
the kick.
That's the kick, though, that some people literally do love that component.
I mean, unless you're Beyonce or Rihanna, I don't really get.
So let me ask you this. What do you do or what do you turn to get inspired when you're having a day, a week or a month where your life is, you know, occupying you in some other way or you're just not really inspired what's happening? What do you do to stay?
Wow, you really got me on like a day where I've actually had an uninspired week.
Good.
And it's been really tough because no one really understands the world of creatives unless you are a creative. You don't know that you need to constantly be inspired. And like if you are burnt out, there is no way that you're going to be inspired.
There was a time when I was doing a weekly sex and relationship advice column, and when I wasn't always getting questions, they'd say to me, pick topics. And I'd say, I get to these points where I'm like, I have nothing left to talk about.
Exactly.
I'm bored.
Like, I'm bored. And what's going to be exciting? But I think for me, it's I take a minute and I center myself. I either meditate or I center myself or I go and watch an episode of trash TV and just I need to disconnect for a moment so that I can reconnect back.
Right.
Because if I cannot connect with my audience, then I'm doing you a disservice and I'm wasting your time and you're never going to come back to me.
That's right.
Ever.
So what's your trash TV go-to? What's the most recharging? You just made a face. It's bad. It's bad. You just made a face.
I hate to say this, but I just can't get enough of the Kardashians.
Okay.
And like this season is actually pretty good.
Can I break your heart?
What?
I've never, ever seen an episode. Ever.
Are we going to have a viewing party?
We're going to have to.
Nothing is better than watching the Kardashians from like 7 years ago.
Really?
Nothing is better than watching old episodes and seeing how their faces have evolved, their lives have evolved, and like
their
bodies.
The two little ones, the two younger ones. I mean, I remember seeing a photo way back in the day, and they're just these like little unfashionable nuggets, like
being
kids.
Kim knew that Kylie was going to be a star.
Oh, really?
Kim knew that Kylie was going to be a star.
All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking more with Nick Mora, our pop culture guru. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, so we're talking to Nick Mora, Loveline's pop culture guru, about all things celebrity. And let's segue a little bit into what's happening in the world in terms of pop culture. So what's on your mind these days?
Okay, so there's a lot on my mind these days. This was like a busy news week between Prince Harry,
right.
Ansel Elgort, and Kylie.
Oh, Kylie.
I mean, all I want to do is talk about Kylie. Kylie is now on a break with Travis Scott.
Okay.
They're taking a break from their relationship.
Official. Both of them are on the same page, aware it's a break.
I mean, word on the street was Travis was at a Hollywood nightlife spot hitting on some chicks.
But see, that's also what's hard about being a celebrity, right? Is your personal issues are made public because people are watching.
Well, you're dating a reality star.
Yeah, what are you
You're dating
do?
Kylie, and she's helping put you on the map.
Right.
So I don't really feel bad for you.
Okay, well said.
You know what I mean? Like, once you get in with the Kardashians, you are set.
Career made.
Your career is made. I am just waiting to get invited to that Christmas party. I can't even get a freaking Sunday service invite.
The closest I ever got was hanging out at Black China's house, but Rob wasn't home.
Were they together?
They were together at that time.
Oh, wow. Well, that was a... Black China was a good user.
Yeah,
she came up.
She sucked the life out of
that. She came up real good.
Yeah.
She got that. Woo. She got him for 18 years.
Unbelievable.
But yeah, so Kylie and Travis are taking a break.
Okay.
And I think it's really interesting in a day and age where you have a kid out of wedlock. I'm very traditional, so I would prefer not to have a child out of wedlock. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in my life, but
right.
I really do believe in a family to be together before you have a kid. And so they obviously had the baby, are together, and now stepping away from the relationship, it's like, is that good for your relationship? Should you step away from a relationship
so
to reconnect?
Do you believe that they'll come back together, or do you think that their separation is movement towards complete separation?
that's where I'm conflicted, because I don't know if you're going to get back together or this is going to be better for your relationship, or if this is like the end of the road.
Because it's always about what you do in that time, right? You're either doing things where you're working on yourself and you're staying connected because you want to circle back, or you're spending that time doing things that are going to completely make it impossible to come back. Like you said, him being seen on a date with somebody else.
Yeah.
That's going to make it really hard to circle back at some
point. Yeah, I mean, he was hitting on the girl next to him. I don't know if they were on a date, okay. But my thing is the Kardashians, for example, really pick the wrong men. Mm. And I mean, Kourtney, I think, almost had it right with Scott. Almost. Okay. I think he had to work through his own things. However, you're dating a rapper. Like, do you really think he's going to be loyal?
Okay. You're not a fan of the rapper world.
Look, I think it's cool to be seen with rappers, but to date and be a have a baby by a rapper,
right.
I don't think that's a good idea. Or a ball player.
Well, like, I'll say this. I for a couple years did a podcast with Amber Rose, and she was consistently dating these rappers, and she herself would say, "Stop dating rappers. It's just it's a subculture that had a lot of in her experience and my experience through her. It was a subculture that wasn't always based in female empowerment." Yeah. It wasn't always pro-relationship. Yeah. And in her experience and mine through her, it was a lot of immaturity at times. And a lot, you know, you're on the road. There's people throwing themselves at you. You're out of the country. It's hard
like
to hold boundaries.
It's the new money concept. This is like what I always say. It's like people who come into new money or suddenly like go from like $0 to $10 million. You have all of this stuff that you've never had before. You have like an infinite access to all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, it's at your fingertips and you can literally go snap your fingers and everything is here for you.
Yeah.
So it's like you're going to ball out because you don't know any different. You're like, I've never experienced this. I'm insatiable. I feel like I've been oppressed and now I'm like going to come out and like go balls to the wall. But if you grew up with money, you're not going to spend money the way that somebody who just got it after not having it does.
You're
you
used
know
to
what
having
I mean?
It. You understand
you,
how
when
to
you
spend
have
it.
It, it's like you don't really need it. You don't need to step out.
So you're basically saying date people that just don't have money. You're basically saying check in on their bank account. If it's over a certain number, red flag, panic. Okay.
No, that's actually not true. Because listen, like, for example, Steph Curry is a great example of this. He comes from a line of basketball players. He comes from a line of wealth. He comes from a line of respect. I mean, listen, all ball players cheat, so I don't know if he does.
Whoa.
But
we're going to get some emails about that one, all ball players.
They do. Come on. You guys are on the road.
Nick is like, I'm not trying to win fans in the ball player area.
I always thought I would be a great athlete's wife, but I never wanted to be an athlete's wife.
That.
You know what I mean?
That.
Unless they were like a cute Jewish soccer player.
There's always like a little
I would have done a cute role. Jewish soccer player. But because I feel like he has the cleanest, I'm using Steph because he has the cleanest rep out of all the ball players.
Okay.
And he's like, he's got Aisha, who like they've got kids together. He comes from a like family full of athletes. So he's used to that lifestyle.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is not like he didn't come from the streets of so-and-so and suddenly
have
$50
million. But I think that's what happened with Tiger Woods as well. Tiger Woods was not considered a popular person. He didn't have a lot of access to dating attractive people. And then all of a sudden he became famous through golfing and then completely cheated on his wife because of what I think you just said.
Exactly.
He was overwhelmed at all the possibilities.
Too many options.
Sure.
When you've already had those options and you've grown up with those options, you don't want those options
But that's
anymore.
Why I date people that no one wants.
Listen, me, can I tell you? I used to date guys that wanted me, like that everybody else wanted too. And then I once dated somebody that nobody would have ever looked at.
Right.
And all of a sudden, after I dated them, they're a hot commodity. And I'm
there
like,
it is.
Trust me, you don't want to date him. Nothing's changed.
Oh my God, I love that. So anything else we need to know about? Because one of the things me and you were talking about was Ansel Egg. How do you say his name?
Elgort?
All
yeah,
right.
I don't know.
There's
I really
a lot
don't
of
know
these...
too much. I don't really, like, I don't follow this guy religiously, but he's
right.
in the news right now for wanting an open relationship.
But there's so much
sex.
That, because we were talking last time about Thomas Middleditch, where it's all these people coming out in the celebrity world wanting open relationships, polyamory. I mean, why now?
Because it's a little bit more acceptable to say that you want that. And I think by nature, men especially are not wired to be monogamous. Mm. And I have this conversation with people all the time. I don't know if we're wired to fully be monogamous.
I agree with that.
I don't know if it's in our DNA.
Yeah.
I am loyal to a fault and I will ride and die with you for sure. I don't think I could ever cheat on anybody. Like, even if we're in a situationship, I can't even cheat on you. Like, that is how loyal I am.
It's a hurtful option to choose, right? If something's not working for you or you need... And that's why I think I'm thankful that some people are owning who they are. And if they're saying, like, look, monogamy is really difficult for me, let me just own that from the door and ask for something that's going to allow us to not injure each other.
But I just think that when you let anyone else into your bedroom, it's like a recipe for disaster.
It's definitely a risk. And that's why the couples I work with in my practice that want to do it, I make sure that they're doing it from a place where they're feeling connected. They're going to be able to have those difficult conversations. They really trust each other. And it's a slow process.
But no one's jealous. Like, my ass would be tearing that girl to shreds.
You're not built for it.
I am not built for a monogamous, for a polyamorous relationship. I am only for monogamy.
But we're pulling for you right now.
Oh,
I mean, you're in your own situation.
I am.
Not a situationship,
it's
a relationship.
It's definitely not a situation.
It's a relationship, and we're pulling for you. We're pulling for you.
He's a cutie.
So, Nick, where can people find you?
You can find me at givemeMora.com and on Instagram and Twitter at NickMoraXO, and it's NICMoraXO.
Beautiful.
Do you even follow me, Chris?
I sure do.
You sure don't.
All right, coming up next, we're going to be sliding into the DMs and our question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page, so weigh in on that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, it's Loveline and Channel Q's 1 year anniversary. We want to fly you and a friend to L.A. to celebrate. We're going to take you out in West Hollywood, put you both up in a hotel, and give you two tickets to the Life is Beautiful concert at the Hollywood Bowl with T-Swift, Lizzo, a whole bunch of others. Go to wearechannelq.com to win. You got 3 days. Now it's time to slide into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore it with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. So my sister is an alcoholic. She started drinking when her boyfriend passed away in a car accident 2 years ago. She's always trying to get drunk and will be smashed by 10 a.m. on any given weekday. I'm worried for her. I don't know what to do to get her healthy again. Please, I need some advice. Well, first off, my heart breaks. I send out tons of love, empathy, and support. It's a very devastating thing, A, to watch someone that you care about struggle with any kind of addiction, but also having lost someone in a car accident or in any form is something that one might struggle with for their entire life. So you're worried about your sister's drinking. A couple things. You know, the best thing we can do is to stay connected. So I always remind people that. The old wisdom was we had to let people hit rock bottom. We now know that's not always the best thing. And that often what people need when they're struggling is to have people in their lives that are there with boundaries, but are there to let them know that they're cared for and they're loved and that they're worth getting help. And so stay connected. Have boundaries. You don't have to be around her while she's drinking, but let her know that you're there for her. Let her know that she's of worth, right? So that's one of the ways you actually help her. Two, not everyone's ready to stop drinking. There's this thing called the stages of readiness for change, and not everyone's in the action stage. And so she might need some more time. She might not be ready to do the hard work of getting sober, which is very difficult. So I would say reflect back to her that you are worried about her. Let her know that you think her drinking is a problem. Stick around and let her know that when she's ready to get help, you'll be there for her. But for some people, you have to let them go on their journey to get to the place they're ready to get sober. It's difficult to sit back and watch, but it's what you got to do. But stick around and be there for her. And like I said, reflect back that you think it's a problem. All right. Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore the confidence. Coming up next, we got Jarrett Hill joining us, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're coming up on Channel Q's 1 year anniversary. We want to fly you and a friend to LA. We're going to party. We're going to take you out in West Hollywood to the iconic Abbey. I will come by and have a cocktail with you, I promise. We're going to put you both up in an amazing hotel and give you two tickets to LA's biggest event, the We Can Survive concert at the Hollywood Bowl. You got T-Swift, Lizzo, the Jonas Brothers, the list goes on and on. Just go to wearechannelq.com, enter to win. You got 3 days, so get up on it. But more importantly, right now, we're Jarrett Hill from Drop the Subject. What's up, Jarrett?
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate all the love.
You're a busy, busy man, though. You're not just doing Drop the Subject.
No.
This is the water in the bucket of your career. You've got
Wednesdays,
so much going on,
Wednesdays are the long days. I get here at 9 and I leave around 9, so. Yeah.
But you're talking my hours.
Yeah, no, it's a long day, but it's a good one. I'm loving everything I'm doing, good. So I'm not complaining.
That's what matters.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a gift. When I hear people getting to work in the field that they choose, my heart's warmed because not everyone gets to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm really grateful for it. I remember, I feel like the universe has always like pulled me back, even if I was like, oh, maybe I'm not supposed to do this anymore. I had a job where I was working at a mortgage refinance company, and like within 4 weeks, I had like gotten resigned to like being fine with just hating this job every day. Oh. And then I got sick and like I got fired and I was like, oh.
Wow, double whammy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, now you're not going to do this. We're going to hit you from every angle, fire you and get you sick.
But
you're
not coming back. But it highlighted for me how quickly you can make yourself okay with something.
Yes.
How quickly I had been like, I hate this job, but I got to do it.
I'll say something though. I think for me anyway, and weighing on this, like LA was really powerful in that. Wait, where are you from?
Bay Area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, coming from the East Coast, I'm from Philly, New York. I lived in both for a very long time. And LA had this opportunity component where there's a lot of people who are chasing dreams. They go after it. They do what they have to do to try to allow them to still go after it. And it really had a positive influence on me where it taught me that like anything's kind of possible here.
Yeah.
Not for everyone necessarily, but that it allowed me to be more creative in what I saw.
I feel like there's a level of spontaneity in big cities that doesn't exist like where I'm from in the suburbs. That
I didn't
is not
see
the
that
same.
In New York though or Philly.
I feel like New York and LA both feel to me like anything could happen today. You know what I mean? I could run into anyone and like I could end up sitting next to anybody at a party, or I could, you know, I told the story on Drop the Subject the other day. The day I moved here, I moved here on one day, like in the middle of the day, and then the next day that I was the full day, I walked up to Hollywood and Highland because it wasn't too far away from me, and I was like, I wanted to go see where the Oscars were every year. And I was like, I was on that block, and no lie, like this old busted like Toyota Avalon pulls up next to me, and like some random already. Person jumps out of the passenger seat, runs around, takes a picture of their own license plate, jumps back in, and the Avalon drives away, and I was like, that was Andy Dick.
Oh,
you know
of course
what I mean?
It was
like so random, you know what I mean? And it was like, oh, welcome to LA.
You know what my moment was? Yeah. My LA moment is I just lived here. I'd been here about a month and I went for Thai food.
Yes.
And I'm just minding my business and I look over and eating a table away is Gwen Stefani.
I mean, come
on. And that for me was like, I'm in LA.
Yeah.
She's just chilling with some dude and her kid eating Thai food. And I was like, and this is just a Tuesday.
Exactly.
Tuesday in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I had a weird moment where then I went to Starbucks and Jodie Foster was in Starbucks, and then Diaz was in the spin class next to me, and then I was like, wow, I'm really in LA.
One of my best friends was out getting pizza with friends, and she was working on the VMAs, and she like went and grabbed pizza, and like the server was like, when they got set, she was like, I'm gonna sit you guys in this area, but you guys seem cool, so it'll be fine. And she was like, well, what does that mean? And like they're 10 minutes into their meal, and who comes and sits at the table next to them? Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Yeah, that's real.
Exactly.
It's hard to stay chill
you know what
with
I mean?
Your pizza during
and,
that.
And like the whole time she's like, we just didn't even talk. She's like, I hardly ate my food. She's like, I was trying not to look over. I was like, don't look over there. Don't look over there. Oh my God, I just want to look. Are they even talking? Are they saying anything? What is she eating? I don't want to
look. That's what happens.
You know what I mean?
That's
all the anxiety.
Well, it's funny because in other cities, you know, people look like people. But in LA, no, it's really them.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't it's look like so-and-so. It's them.
Oprah Winfrey always talks about people. We'll walk up and be like, you look just like Oprah. She's like, I get that all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real.
It's actually Oprah.
That's real.
Yeah.
So LA,
you
huh?
You had a big weekend here in LA, huh? Huh?
So funny. I was like, what are we even talking about right now? I did.
You had a very LA weekend.
And for those that can't relate to this, it's going to sound hyper dramatic. There's so many threads to this, but I had to move this weekend.
Yes.
And I know
I was watching on Insta story.
Oh, was I putting it a lot? Was I putting it on there a lot?
No, you put a few things on there, moving boxes and the cat and all that kind of
stuff.
Oh,
okay, yeah. Okay. I tend to forget what I put on there.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
That's really the
point.
It
comes and goes, and it literally does. So it was really heavy because it caused the intersection of a lot of really important and interesting existential stuff, right? Where some people, they just move and it is what it is. But for me, it was a really small scale trauma for me. I wasn't looking to move. The place that I was living, which I had lived in for 6 years, had some massive structural issues, and I was needing to vacate immediately. That is a long story. And it was just really interesting because the move brought up a heavy levels of vulnerability that I wasn't prepared or really expecting to encounter, where there was my own ageism that came up.
How so?
Just really taking this weird assessment of how I thought my life should be at this point.
Okay.
And I know it doesn't make a lot of sense. But
No. How old are you?
I'll be turning 42 in October.
And you felt like at 42, you should be what?
Somehow not in this position.
In an apartment or in a home? Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so
unpack that for me, Chris.
I'm gonna unpack this. This is gonna get big. We're really gonna go deep for a minute here. So no, I mean, like, it wasn't around the specific as to where I was, because the condo that I was living in is quite stunning. I was very proud of the place that I had and how I had put it together. But you know, ageism is an interesting thing that I've only been starting to encounter probably in the past 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
And that's really shocking to some people to hear, because, you know, I think a lot of people will assume that I am above some of these social norms,
yeah.
But I'm a person,
sure.
And I'm swimming within it. And it was a really interesting time to really encounter that, where I thought, I guess at my age, I wouldn't be feeling as though I was in these positions where I felt out of control or powerless.
Mm.
And having to vacate your home is a very destabilizing experience.
Yeah.
Now, of course, no one's above or beyond having to have such experiences happen. It's really not tied to age, but somehow that was a factor that was coming up, where I was like, you know, I would assume that at this point in my life, I would feel more stable.
Well, and I think that's more about living in a big city than it is about any kind of age, right? Like, big cities, like, crazy things like this happen where
that's
you
right.
live in an old building where you can't really control what's going on. And then you feel like, oh man, I feel displaced or something, right? Like, yeah.
You feel you're displaced. And what's also fascinating is also just looking at, I think, classism and money and finance, because having lived in my home for, it was going on like 6 years, the world has really progressed in what you have to pay
mm-hmm.
to find something very comfortable. And you look at the studies where it says, I think in no city right now can you get a one-bedroom apartment.
If you're making $100,000 a year,
that's
or something
right.
like that, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
So all of a sudden I'm faced with, however much I think I should be making, however much I am making, what's being asked for the kind of place I think I need to live in, and then what's actually doable.
Yeah.
It's the intersection of all those pieces. Fascinatingly transformative.
Okay, you said ageism
experience.
Came up for you, and then other things. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. I like when Jared Hill comes by. I feel like I'm in like a little therapy session right here. He's like, we're going to come back and unpack that.
Yeah, I'll take us to break.
You
worry about
Thank
your stuff.
You.
When we come back, we're going to dig into Chris's stuff. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q. Ooh,
all girl. Right, we're back. The life we lead,
it
right,
is a
Jared?
Situation. In
so
here.
We got Jared Hill with us from Drop the Subject, amongst other things. Busy, busy man.
Yes, yes.
Journalist extraordinaire.
I'll take that.
Living the life he wants to lead.
So don't try and divert. So
okay,
we were talking
I'm totally
about you.
Trying, actually.
Yes. You were saying that when you moved, a lot of things came up for you. Ageism
yes.
was one of them.
Yes.
And having this idea that you were supposed to be doing a certain, you were supposed to be in a certain place.
Jared, that was the old me. That was last segment. The
he was
new
like, that's
me
totally
is full
old
of
news.
Hope and more ground.
But what other things came up for you?
Why would you let the new me be me?
Uh-uh. I'm therapisting the therapist.
Yeah, you sure are.
What other things came up for you?
Okay, so what's interesting is my family's on the East Coast.
Right.
And I'm over here on the West Coast. I don't have any family over here. So it was powerful for me to see how, even at my age, even being someone who has a lot of resources internally and externally, who's understanding self-care and all that, how not having family nearby in those psychological moments can really make you feel like you don't necessarily have a safety net, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm a single individual in the world, right? And so it was a powerful moment for me to really have to stand on my own in a way that I haven't before, having been engaged. What were you going to say?
Well, when you say family, I'm guessing you mean like biological family. That doesn't...
Yes.
Or do you feel like you have a solid base of friends around you here?
Yeah, I do. Last year, oddly, coincidentally, three of my best friends left California.
Mm-hmm.
One of them left the country. Went to Ireland, which is beautiful. I'm happy for him. So it's a lot of newness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, moving into new space, look, times have changed. And having not looked at, you know, what people have to pay for a place in 6 years.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And that rent control is nice.
So you are forced to confront, like, what have I been doing with my life? What are my finances like? Have I been taking care of myself? I mean, it was just this flooding of all these different layers and elements. And so this weekend, I put on my IG story. I remember this part, that I cried publicly.
Mm-hmm.
That was a goal I had for
that.
Myself for this year, was to cry more and to cry publicly.
So I didn't,
oh, it happened.
I didn't know. I don't think you said what you were crying about, though. What made you cry?
Well, this is... Okay, so I was sitting on my stoop. The the people were coming to pack my place up. I paid for a crew to pack my place, mm-hmm. pack me, move me. Sitting on my stoop, and I'm like, I love this home. I don't want to leave. I'm watching people put my stuff in boxes, and I'm looking down on my email, and I get an email from someone saying that a client of mine, who I hadn't seen in a year, that she had passed away a month ago, that out of the blue, she got a diagnosis of lung cancer that was very aggressive, and she passed a month ago. And it was a moment of just way too much happening.
Yeah.
And I walked across the street to Coffee Bean and just stood in Coffee Bean and cried.
Oh, no.
And it was really powerful. I think it scared some people.
I'm sure it did.
I think other people were just uncomfortable. I'm sure some people found it very powerful and moving. But I said, I was like, I'm doing this. And I did it. It was really, really, really...
Did you also buy a coffee?
I sure did.
Okay, because, I mean, that would have been really weird if you just walked in there.
Could you imagine if I was like, I just need a public space in which to enact this? I'm not here to purchase anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just need witnesses to this moment.
I could hear someone listening to this and being like, did he actually get something?
Yeah, I did. Exactly. I did. I got that soy latte. But I guess the bigger message and why I'm bringing all this up is just like, you know, those moments, if we allow them to be, can be really healing.
Yeah.
And we can learn a lot about ourselves. And I try to like allow that to exist too, that it doesn't just have to be this depressing, horrible week. Weekend, but also I learned a lot about myself. Resources I didn't think I had, but also just vulnerabilities.
So then the first night in the new place, how did you feel?
Oh my gosh. My cat cried.
Really?
I swear, cat cried. Still getting comfortable in there.
Yeah.
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 Not into it.
You don't feel at home yet?
No way.
Have you decorated it?
No.
Are you going to?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that'll help.
Yeah. All my books are in there. My books and my bookshelves. That's really meaningful to me. New neighborhood. It's going to be a new me.
So for my interior design clients, when they move into a place, like when we like transform it, then they walk in and it looks the way that they have like envisioned their new place looking.
Oh.
That tends to like really settle a person into the place.
I never
place.
Even thought of that.
Yeah.
Have a vision ahead of time, execute that vision, and then move in, you feel familiar.
You don't necessarily have to have it ahead of time. I think sometimes you move into a place and you start to see it come. When I walk into an empty room, I see it come to life immediately.
See, I don't think of those ways.
That's
but
not
you
my
do.
Brain works.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you need to start like putting things up on the walls that you enjoy or buy the couch that you want or, you know, whatever it is, like to make it start feeling like your place, you need to start doing that.
It'll help when I put the art on the walls, because right now it's not.
Whether it's the art on the walls or it's the big piece of furniture that you want to put in that place or start moving things around. I'm guessing things aren't even like in order yet.
Not fully. You know what was soothing, sticking with what you're saying to me, and it did help, was when it was kind of surprising that this was so powerful, but putting my plants
where
around,
they go.
Having all my plants with me and putting them around and like seeing them. And plants, P.S., plants just really change a place. They add like life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I have a lot.
Adding that and like starting to give things a home where they're going to live. Like this plant, this is where this is going to be. The sofa. Oh, you know what? I think this is probably the best arrangement for this. And putting down, you know, different things like that, I think really start to, my brother is trying to FaceTime me. If I told him I was on the radio,
right now,
he'd love that. But if you start to give things a home, then it starts to feel like, oh, this is where I live. This is how this space.
Well,
is
my cat's happy because she in my old place, she had her own bedroom. She has her own bedroom in this place.
Mm.
So she like she literally knows which one's her room. She goes in
you
there.
Have a bedroom
she comes out at night. Her little in the morning, her eyes are waking up as I'm making coffee, and I'm like, "Hey, baby," and she's like, "She has her own bedroom.
Your cat has a bedroom.
She needs one." She deserves one and she needs one.
Well, okay.
Some of my shoes are in her closet, but she'll be okay.
How
with that.
Dare you? How do you sleep at night?
Oh.
This would be a perfect place to sleep.
That's my bougie little baby. I'm not bougie. She is.
Your cat has a bedroom.
I'm not bougie. My cat is.
Yeah, you're the vegan with a cat that has its own room.
My cat's like, bougie. What am I going to do? She likes nice things, Jared.
You are as LA as you could possibly be.
I would love to see you tell her that.
I'm allergic to cats, so I probably
exactly.
would be having that.
She's
chat.
Not gonna be trying to hear that from you.
She won't.
Jared Hill from Drop the Subject. Thank you for coming on and therapeutizing me.
Yes, I'll do this again next week.
All right, y'all. Coming up next, question of the night, so weigh in on it. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Our question of the night is about what's more important to you, chemistry or compatibility?
Question of the night.
That's right. So let's just break down the difference. This is something that gets really confused. People conflate the two. They are very different. you know, compatibility is more about personality styles. What is it like when we come together as two people or personalities? You know, and that sometimes speaks more to sustainability and long-term ability, right? When we have a conflict, when we're having a rough day, a good day, what happens when us as two different people come together? So that's compatibility. And that's rooted in, again, relational history, trauma, attachment style, those things. Chemistry is more of that initial lust-based, I'm drawn to you, I'm attracted to you. That's hard. That's more there or not. And again, that can develop and that can wax and wane. Compatibility is more developable. We can work on our personality style and calming down and not being triggered and all that. So compatibility has more flexibility. Chemistry is a little bit more there or not there, although we're talking more about hanging in there for a couple of days and kind of seeing what can emerge and develop. But they're two distinct processes, both important. But for long-term sustainability, compatibility tends to be more meaningful. But let's see what you all said. What's when dating, what's more important, your chemistry or compatibility? First answer we got, chemistry. So you want to feel that power, that lust. You want to want them. You want to be wanted as well. Someone else said compatibility. So, you know, again, if you're more compatible, but you don't have any chemistry, that means you might not be having a lot of sex, but you enjoy your time together. If you have a lot of chemistry, but no compatibility, sex is going to be good. You're going to be drawn to them. You're going to think they're hot, but those fights are going to be nasty and there's going to be a lot of conflict. Someone else said, both are important to me, yet I'm still single. Hang in there. Hang in there. Someone else said, chemistry first. Can find compatibility over time. Well said. You kind of nail both definitions. Someone else said compatibility. What is that? 1,000,000,000,000,000,000%. Yep. That gives that long-term relational sustainability. I love this one. Someone said, I'm a brat. I need both. I hear you. You're greedy. No, both are great. I mean, look, both are ideal. Because when one's kind of not really feeling as present, you got the other one to kind of sustain you and hold you together. That's why both are ideal. Right? Because you're not always going to have both at the same time. And when your personalities are rubbing each other the wrong way and triggering them, thank God you are really sexually drawn to that person and they're hot to you. And when you're not really feeling, sexually drawn to them or that energy, thank God that you really have a good personality mesh and you can really go out there and have some good conversation and your personalities blend well. Someone else said, my younger self, chemistry. Now, compatibility. I can see that as I get older, I definitely see the value in both and I seek both, but I also honor that compatibility, you know, again, is meaningful because, you know, when you're sitting down at a table day after day out having breakfast and dinner and traveling and doing things, the compatibility needs to be there. You're sitting on an airplane, you're having sitting at dinner, you know, you really want to feel that alignment is there. Someone else said compatibility. Chemistry will keep me interested at first, but if we're incompatible, I'm out. Truth to that. You know, it's like the chemistry is what gets you on the first date. Compatibility is often what gets you there on the second date or third date. Someone else said chemistry. All right. You like a lot of fire and spice. Are you a Scorpio? You might be a Scorpio. Someone else said chemistry. I would hate to stay in a long-term relationship with someone who's just compatible. I hear you. I need to want you. I need you to want me too. You know what I mean? All right. That's our question tonight. Coming up next, our DMs. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, y'all, go to wearechannelq.com. We've got our 1-year anniversary party, and we want you and a friend to come to LA. That's right. Coming out day and the 1-year anniversary of Channel Q, we're going to fly you and a friend to LA, put you up in a bougie hotel, take you for drinks to the iconic Abby, and also give you 2 tickets to LA's biggest event, the We Can Survive concert with T-Swift, Lizzo, Jonas Brothers, and others. Go to wearechannelq.com to register and win. You got 3 days, so get on it. But now, it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs
is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. So it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, I've been with my girlfriend for more than a year. She's Latina, but I'm from Arab descent. Because of that, my parents have never approved of the relationship. The problem is, I love her very much, but my parents don't want me to promise her any future within the relationship, and I don't have the courage to confront them and tell them that I'm happy in it. How do I build up confidence to defend my relationship and get them to be more accepting? This is important. This actually comes up somewhat often around religion and race. Here's the thing. You can't make them accept it. You can't make anyone accept something. And I never give people advice around how to make someone think differently. I don't want to do that. What I do want to do, though, is help you get more confidence. Listen, we don't get to choose who we love. We have some control. We can choose the environments we put ourselves in. We can choose who we spend time around. But sometimes love just happens. And I think that it's a worthy goal. I think it's a worthy goal that I tell people that they need to sometimes put it before work and put it before finances. Because as relational beings, right, we're born from relationships. We're always in them. We thrive in them. We seek them. Every song is about them. Every movie. Relationships are such a central part of who we are as human beings, and they're hyper important. So on having said that, you have to really look at the relationship you have romantically and both with your parents, because you can have both. Your girlfriend and you don't necessarily have to be accepted by your parents, and your parents don't necessarily have to be brought into your relationship romantically. There are some people that have learned how to kind of hold and carry both. So how do you get the confidence? Remind yourself of how important this person is that you're dating. Remind yourself how meaningful your happiness and their happiness is. You don't necessarily need your parents' acceptance. If they want to set a boundary and not let you come over for the holidays, you get to decide who you spend the holidays with. You can tell your parents, look, this person's in my life. And if you want to spend the holidays with me, then they come with me, or you don't get to see me. It's going to get really difficult and maybe possibly funky. I don't know how healthy your parents are, but the confidence that you need that you're asking me about is going to be rooted in you really just reminding yourself how meaningful this person is and the gifts that come from the relationship. But I can't promise you that there's any way to get your parents to ever, ever accept it. Some people live in social worlds, or they've been raised in a way where those things are sometimes more important to them than even the relationship they have with their children. And we can't always be more powerful and a little bit stronger than that. But you do get to decide how your parents are in your life and how you bring your girlfriend into their life. And sometimes people have to, for the duration of their marriage or relationship, kind of keep it separate. It's the same way I look at people who want to go home, but they have a parent who might be an active drug or alcohol user. I tell them, look, you tell them, I'm going to come home as long as you're not drinking. But if I find out that you are drinking, we're going to leave. We might have to stay somewhere else. And you might need to do the same thing. But it's unfortunate that your parents put you in a position like this, but just work on the confidence. But I can't promise you that they're ever going to be accepting of it. This is kind of one of those more difficult things. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, y'all. That's our show. We'll be back tomorrow night, though. Fear not. 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, thank you for hanging out with me, and you have an awesome, awesome night.